We've been actually dealing with some rather heavy subjects here over the last few weeks about examining ourselves, and that causes us to have to think internally, think about how we think. And so I thought I would try to focus on something I wouldn't say lighter, but on the other side of the coin here, I'd like to talk to you about the benefits of God's commandments and His instructions. Because as we are all well aware, people in this society have always gotten off onto the little details or the little twigs. And of course, we are very, very familiar with how upset Christ was with the Pharisees, who were definitely into the legalistic do's and don'ts and all the little technical things. And they were missing the principle, and they were missing the point of what God's law is and how it should be applied in our lives and what the benefit is and the enjoyment and the positive aspect, which people like King David understood very, very thoroughly, and he wrote a great deal about it. And, of course, there are many things in the Bible. Paul's comments. Paul went from being a Pharisee's Pharisee who was all technically oriented into all these little rules and regulations, many of which were added by man, were not part of God's law, but they wanted to be more righteous than God, so they proceeded to try to add a whole bunch of extra things so that God wouldn't catch them and couldn't accuse them of being bad or evil or have any kind of sin. We're going to be so good, we're going to out-righteous God here. But David understood the principles of it. God or Jesus Christ recognized David's attitude. He called David a man after his own heart. In other words, someone who understood clearly from the same point of view that God did, God's way of life. So let's look here. Let's start out here in Psalms, the 119th chapter, just to kind of as a preference here or something to get us in the right frame of mind here. Psalms 119, and let's... Okay, in verse 97, and I know everyone is familiar with this. 119, verse 97, David expressed his, this whole chapter, I should say, has reference to God's laws and his way of life and wanting to learn his statutes and how wonderful they are and all the benefits that they gave. And in verse 97, he says, "Oh, how I love your law. It is my meditation all the day." Now, that's quite a statement because, of course, when we look around in this society, we see very clearly everyone going against God's law and God's principles, and they think they're right. They think that they're doing the right thing. For society, they think that, you know, their way is best. But as we heard in the sermonette, they believe a lie. They don't understand God's principles, and they certainly don't understand the benefits of God's commands. But David did, and he said, "I love your law, and I think about it all day long." He was constantly observing God's way of life and thinking about it in relation to his own actions, which is, of course, what we should be doing. We should be examining our own thoughts all the time and comparing them with what God's precepts or principles are. Go over here to verse 165 here in the same book, or the same chapter, I mean. And it says, "Great peace..." Now, here's one of the benefits that David recognized from God's law. "Great peace have they which love your law." and nothing shall offend them. Now that's a pretty strong statement. Great peace would people have if you love God's law, if you follow it, if it becomes part of you. He says you're going to have a lot of peace, peace of mind, because you understand the overall principle. You're not sitting there wondering, oh, what's going to happen next? And even this thing, this situation here with Mr. Luker's very surprising death. Well, we know that our lives are in God's hands, and we know that God has a plan for each one of us, and he uses us, and he trains us, and he works through us as much as we allow him to do that. And we just have faith and understand and accept the fact that God knows what's best, and he understands things we don't understand, and so we accept his decision. And that was his decision. And certainly God could have intervened and healed him and restored him to normal, as he has done with other people and done all kinds of other pretty outstanding miracles. But he didn't choose to do that. And Christ said, take one day at a time. And we don't, because we don't know what tomorrow brings. And I'm sure that when you look back in your life, when things have happened to us or to you, you didn't expect them. You hadn't planned, boy, I didn't expect this to happen. And these are things that just transpire, and we have to trust God to take care of us. And certainly David understood that. And that's why when you understand God's plan and you have accepted the truth of God and you are striving to live by that truth, you have great peace. And we'll read another verse later that Paul tells us the same thing, that he had to learn that. And he had to learn and come to understand that when you give yourself over to God and you trust him for your life, you have a lot of peace. And it talks about the peace that passes understanding, or what it means is the peace that passes human understanding. Other people don't experience that kind of peace. They don't have inner peace. And they, because there's always this nagging thing in the back of their mind, oh, what's going to happen next? Or what if this? Or what if that? And they're worrying about this thing, and they're worrying about that thing, and there's all kinds of turmoil. That's just the way it is. Okay, if you go in that same chapter to verse 172, a few verses over, it says, my tongue shall speak of your word, for all your commandments are righteousness. So David definitely understood this. Now I want to show you, if you go back to Psalms 19, not 119, but Psalms 19, here are some of the benefits that David saw and experienced and lived in Psalms 19, and we'll start here in verse 7. He said, the law of the Lord is perfect. It converts the soul. Or, let's see, the margin says, restores the soul. The testimony of the Lord is sure, making wise the simple. So it's through God's law and his statutes and his way of life that we gain true wisdom. In other words, where we can step back and see the big picture rather than getting out onto the twigs. And I was thinking about when I was a kid this morning and kind of laughing to myself because I could have killed myself and my and my buddies and I could have killed each other, or been killed, I should say, or broken bones or broken our necks or whatever. But one of the principles that you learn when you build a treehouse, and we weren't happy to build a treehouse 5 or 10 feet off the ground. We had to build it up like about 25 feet in the air, you know, where we had a special rope ladder that we built. And, of course, I was trying to remember, how did we do that? Oh, yeah, we got a whole bunch of pieces of wood, and we drilled holes in them, and then we took rope, and we tied big knots, and we would slip, you know, the first piece of wood down over those two ropes, down against the knot, and we'd do the next one, set the knots up, and so on. Well, all it had to do would have one of those knots let go or one of those old pieces of wood split, and you're 25 feet up in the air dangling by this thing. That's a long way to fall. Somewhere along the line, they used to build a lot of new houses where we were living, so we would go collect scrap lumber, and we also found this big, it was a pretty good-sized piece of concrete forming, where they, you know, where they use these forms to hold, to build the poured concrete basement. And I don't know, it was probably 3 by 4 feet or something like that. So we dragged that thing home, and somehow, I don't know how we got it up in the tree. That thing was heavy. But somehow we winched it up there, and I don't know if my mother really knew what we were all doing back there or not. But anyway, we got it way up in the tree, and we tried to find, you know, these branches, and we nailed it in there. And then eventually we built, out of scrap stuff, we built a little, you know, a little house, so to speak, up there with a roof. And so that was all big-time excitement. But we also were smart enough not to go out on a limb, as they say, you know. You don't climb out where the limb gets real small because it could break or you could fall off. And if you recall back many years ago, some of you will recall this, that was one of the things that Mr. Armstrong used to emphasize. Stick to the trunk of the tree. Don't get out on the twigs. Now, you know how many people in religion go nutty over the twigs and get themselves all fouled up and can't see the big picture? And this is what he's talking about. If you really understand God's law, you have, it gives you wisdom. It gives you understanding. You can stand back and see things from a bigger perspective, from the trunk of the tree perspective. People get all crazy about little detail things that they'll make religion out of. The little laws or rules that they think need to be observed and really have nothing to do with the principle or the obedience to God. It's just really a matter of personal preference. But they make a religion out of it, and they'll make a big point out of it. And they focus in on these things which cause them to be unbalanced and make, you know, they focus on the little things. They're out there on the twigs. We need to see the big picture here of what Jesus Christ created from the beginning, the people that he formed and put on this earth. And then I was watching the new Pope. I can only sit there and work on the computer so long, and then your eyes kind of go crossed, you know, and your brain says tilt. And anyway, so I had to take a break, and I flicked on the news, and it was just when the white smoke had come out of the chimney. And somebody came into City Hall, there were artist works, and said, oh, he said, I thought I saw white smoke coming out of the City Hall. Maybe we had a new mayor. And my answer was, I'd like to see white smoke coming out of the White House. But anyway, that's another subject. But the point is that it was very impressive to me to see these people out there, thousands and thousands of people standing there waiting in the rain with their umbrellas and everything, for this new Pope to come out, and they're all chanting, Viva le Papa, Viva le Papa, Viva, you know, this boom, boom, this powerful chant. Now, that might be impressive to some people, but it's kind of scary to me. Because when you get into a big crowd and this whole crowd is worked up, you know, like they did in Germany, you know, Sieg Heil to Hitler, or put yourself in Christ's position. Crucify him, and the crowd was screaming and yelling and chanting. I don't know how many people were there, but at least I'm sure hundreds. Crucify him. Crucify the very one who took the dirt, created them, you know, mankind, breathed life into them, and there they are wanting to kill him. And there's that same chant going on, except different words, all together. Get rid of him. When you have a big mob of people, Mr. Cole, having been in the police department, knows what I'm talking about. You get a big mob of people, it can get really scary when they start trying to move. And it's not a, but that was what I hearkened back to, was the fact that it was just like when Jesus Christ was there. They weren't saying live, they were saying die. And then they all these people were sitting there waiting for the new pope, thinking they were going to get some kind of blessing from him that was going to be, you know, some spiritual blessing or whatever. Like he was, God's representative, and he had the power to give them a blessing. God's the only one who has the power to bless us. No human being does. But you can just see the direction. You get little hints about how things are going to be later on. And when you go into Revelation and you go into 2 Thessalonians talking about the man of sin being revealed, and you read in Revelation about the miracles that this false prophet is going to bring down, it's going to be a frenzy, and all these people are going to be enamored with this individual. And it's going to be a big mob thing again. And if you aren't part of the game, it's called the mark of the beast. You're not with the program. You're out of here. And they're not going to put up with us. So it's not going to be a pleasant time in the future. Anyway, those were the thoughts that were going through my mind when I saw that. And then I think about, on the other side of the coin, the balance of God's law and his way of life, and it's so simple. It isn't complicated. It doesn't have all kinds of twigs out here. It's a very conservative, very simple, very easy to understand, and really quite easy to follow, and it gives us all kinds of benefits. That's why God gave it to us. He didn't give us his law to see us dance to the tune. I wonder if these people can do all these things. No, he gave these things to us. He gave it to Israel to be a benefit to us. David came to understand. That's why he said what he did here. Verse 8, statutes of the Lord are right. They rejoice the heart. So one of the benefits is they rejoice our heart. The commandment of the Lord is pure, enlightening the eyes, giving us the ability to see things, perception, because when you understand God's truth and his way of life, you can see through all this smoke and mirrors and all the baloney that is out there in the world. It gives us perception and wisdom. The fear of the Lord is clean. It endures forever. Now I'm reading this out of King James. The judgments of God are true and righteous altogether. So people look for justice. And unfortunately, you know, we don't have as much justice as we'd like to see. More to be desired are they than gold. Now, that's how valuable and how much of a benefit it is to understand God's commandments His statutes, His judgments, His principles. They're greater to be desired than gold, yes, than much fine gold, sweeter also than honey and the honeycomb. Moreover, by them is your servant warned. In other words, God gives, through understanding God's way of life and His laws, we can foresee and perceive things, and we are warned of, you know, bad things. We will recognize, it talks in Proverbs about the wise man foresees evil, perceives evil, and avoids it. He gets out of there. He sees it and goes, I'm not going to be involved in that. And he takes a detour. And in keeping of them, there is great reward. Who can understand his errors? In other words, personally, who can see ourselves except God? Cleanse you. He's asking God to cleanse him from his secret faults, and then he goes on down. So these are the benefits that God gives us. He gives us, through his law, rejoicing of the heart, the capability of having a clear vision and seeing things clearly, and being able to rejoice with having found something that's more valuable than gold. Now, if we go back to Exodus 20, I just wanted to start reading through some of these commandments. I don't want to give you a sermon on, this is Exodus the 20th chapter. We should all know where that is. I'll read this out of the New King James. He says in verse 1, Exodus 20, now God is up on the mountain, and this is when the people were trembling because, you know, God's voice was loud and there was thunderings and lightning flashes and the trumpet and the mountain was smoking. But this is what God gave to them. And then the people said, Moses, you talk to us because we're going to die if we keep having God present these things to us. In verse 1, and God spoke all these words, saying, I am the Lord your God who brought you out of the land of Egypt, out of the house of bondage. Now that's talking to a spiritual group, converted people, brought us out of this world and out of the bondage of sin, giving us the truth and giving us the understanding. Because unless God has called us, we don't really even understand these commandments in principle properly. So he's talking to us specifically. You shall have no other gods before me. So he's talking to people who are called out of the world. And this is where I'd like you to go back to Joshua. And this is really the principle here. Joshua, the first chapter. And going through this before, I was impressed by, I'd read this before, but I hadn't really thought about it that much. Joshua, the first chapter in verse 7. Only he says, be strong and very courageous, that you may observe to do according to all the law which Moses, my servant, has commanded you. This is God, or the Lord speaking. Turn not from it to the right hand or to the left, that you may prosper in whatever you do or wherever you go. Don't vary. Have a straight focus, a clear focus, and stick to it. And this is what God is really saying here in this first commandment. I am the Lord your God who brought you out of the land of Egypt, out of the house of bondage. You shall have no other gods before me. And interestingly enough, we heard about the gods of Egypt. And they were all divided up. Oh, we got to have a god for the water and a god for the frogs and a god for the sun and a god for this and a god for that. It was, what are they? Nothing. It's nothing. Piece of wood or piece of metal or whatever. God said, I'm the one, and you don't have anybody else that's more important to you than I am. And it's very interesting principle. It's simple, there it is. Don't have anybody else before me. And then he goes on, the next commandment, you shall not make for yourself any carved image or any likeness of anything that is in heaven above or that is in the earth beneath or that is in the water under the earth. You shall not bow down to them nor serve them, for I, the Lord your God, am a jealous God, visiting the iniquity of the fathers on the children to the third and fourth generations of those who hate me, but showing mercy to thousands of those who love me and keep my commandments. I'd like you to go back to Luke 14. At the time of baptism, I'm sure the minister reviewed this with you. If he didn't, he should have. This is but I'm sure he did, because this is one of the basic scriptures. We call it counting the cost, Luke 14. Okay? Here's the principle that God's trying to show us here, because the benefit is that if you keep, first of all, a clear objective, a clear target, a clear path, or straight path, I should say, and stay, remember the old phrase, you know, you got to stay on the straight and narrow. Keep your, one thing that drives me crazy, and I spend a lot of time on the road, people who are, well, I don't know if they're on the phone or texting, what in the world they're doing, but they're weaving all over the place. And you know, I hold my breath sometimes and try to get around these people quickly on the interstate because, you know, all of a sudden they'll start to swerve over. I've seen truck drivers do it. And, you know, I thought, man, if I was right alongside that truck, who knows what he's doing in the cab, you know, and all of a sudden that thing goes swerving over into the other lane and he swings back again. Or some person, I guess they're texting, and the thing, they'll be riding your bumper because they're kind of in auto mode, you know, and they don't even realize what they're doing. And just, terrible. And it scares you and it irritates you. Because they don't know, you know, they're not keeping things straight and they aren't watching what they're doing. And they're going to cause themselves and other people problems. And everybody knows that if you're going to be successful, you got to stick at the job. Figure out what your goal is. Seven laws of success, you know, is you have to have the right goal. And you have to stick to it. Stick to itiveness and be perseverant. All these very important factors. And that's what God is saying. You better stick with my principles, my truth. Don't get sidetracked. Don't get off on the twigs. Don't get go to the left hand or the right hand. Just stay with this. And if you do, you're going to benefit. And the second one, I should say, here that we're going to read, because the principle of the second commandment is in Luke 14 and started at verse 25. And he says, and there went great multitudes with him, and he turned and he said to them, if any man come to me, and now this is the King James, and hate not his father, or in other words, love less by comparison, that we shouldn't be hating our father and our mother and our wife, but love less by comparison is what it means. And love less by comparison his father, his mother, his wife, and children, and brethren, and sisters. Yes, and his own life also. He can't be my disciple. Now that is totally in line with the second commandment. Nothing can be more important to us than God's way of life. That's the principle. Doesn't mean we don't love these other people, but God still has to be the most important, and that is exactly what God's saying in the second commandment. And if we want to be a follower or a learner or a disciple of Christ, as Christ himself said right here, you can't. Nothing can be more important to you than God's way. even to the point of losing your life if you have to, for what you believe. And whosoever does not bear his cross or take up the responsibility and come after me cannot be my disciple. So this is why we call this section here of Scripture counting the cost. You better think about this. This isn't to be some emotional decision that we make. I mean, there's some emotion in it, I'm sure, and it varies with each person. But it is a commitment that we clearly and maturely make, and we realize and we fully agree and we can see, yes, that's the right way to go, and I want to go that way. And I know with God's help I can make it. You know, I can go through because he promises to help and support us. But if you're not willing to take on the responsibility, do what we have to do, and this is what we've been doing here in preparation for the Passover, we have to examine ourselves. That takes effort. You have to think about it. It takes prayer. It takes thinking. And sometimes it's pretty painful because we start seeing things that we don't want to see in ourselves. And so as a result of that, that's what he means by picking up the responsibility. For which of you intending to build a tower, and then he goes on down and gives these examples that you're going to think about it before you do it. You make a plan. If you don't plan it out, you just get the building partially done, you run out of money, and everybody sits there and they laugh at you. They begin to mock him, Christ said, because he started, but he couldn't finish it. So, verse 33, so likewise, whosoever he be of you that doesn't forsake all that he has, he cannot be my disciple. That doesn't mean you have to be a Jesuit priest and go sleep on a hard board or something. That's not what that means. Because Christ also said, I've come to bring life and bring life more abundantly. Benefit again of following God. An abundant life, which he promises us. And he certainly has fulfilled that. But this has to be the overriding, most important thing in our life. And we need to think about that and understand it before we make the agreement. And as long as we understand that ahead of time, Christ is saying, that's fine. Just understand what the rules are here. You know, this is not a game we're playing. This is a total commitment. And this is what he's telling us in the second commandment. If you do that, you are going to have an abundant life. You're going to gain all these wonderful benefits from following these principles of God's law. All right, the third commandment, don't take God lightly here. You shall not take, verse 7, the name of the Lord your God in vain, for the Lord will not hold him guiltless who takes his name in vain. Does that just mean using, you know, curse words and whatever? Well, it does mean that. But it's the principle involved. Don't take God lightly. And isn't that what Paul says there in 1 Corinthians 11? We're talking about examining ourselves. We need to take it seriously. We need to understand this applies, I should say, to the Passover and the word not taking it unworthily, because we want to make sure that we understand the importance of it, that we aren't taking it ho-hum, you know, oh, this is another thing I have to do. That's not picking up your cross or your responsibility and really putting that first in your life. You're just kind of going through the motion. That is taking it unworthily. I have a note here. It says it keeps us from following our own counsels. In other words, God's law keeps us from coming up with our own conclusions. Now notice here in Proverbs, if you go to Proverbs 14, because this is what he mentioned. There's another passage there in Psalms I was reading. And it talked about how Israel put God aside, and they didn't pay any attention to what God's laws were, and they profaned God's way of life, and they trampled on it. And he said, I turned you over to your own counsels or your own decisions or your what seems right to you. Now, have you heard some of the conclusions that people come up with in this world as to what they think is right? And you're like, that's not right. Well, let me clue you in on something here. I want you to think about this. You and I, and lots of other people, even in the society, who have been reared with some, you know, church training, biblical training. At least they have. They've been taught principles of so-called right and wrong. You don't steal. You don't lie. You don't do these things. And they try to live by those as best they can. They certainly don't always live by them, but in other words, they understand those things, because they have a certain belief in God, and these were certain principles they were taught as they grew up. But when you're dealing with people who don't even believe in God, I want you to think about this now. Put yourself in the category of people who don't believe in God. What standard do they have? When they come up with a conclusion saying, well, I don't see anything wrong with that. That seems good to me. That seems fair. We should accept all these things. And you're going, I can't believe you could say that. Well, believe it. Because they have no reason not to believe that. You and I can't understand that. It's like, well, how could you? You know, that's not right. Well, that's because you understand right and wrong. And these people, they don't have a standard. They make it up as they go along. If you don't believe in God, then you don't accept any of these principles. The Bible doesn't mean anything to you. Ten commandments? Psst, I don't do that. I don't believe in God. Don't tell me what to do. Now, here's what Proverbs says. Proverbs 14 and verse 12. There is a way which seems right to a man, but the end thereof are the ways of death. Oh, it looks so good. Remember Debbie Boone, just really... really irritated me. This is goes way back into the 70s, I guess. And her very popular song and the one phrase in there, how could it be wrong when it seems so right? How could it be wrong when it seems so right? That's how you reason? Oh, it seemed good to me. That's just exactly what it says. So it must be right. It seems so right. So it must be good. Baloney. Lots of people think it seems good. It looks good. Oh, that looks good. That looks like the right thing to do. I don't see anything wrong with it. That's right. You don't. That's why you're a human being. Or you are a human being, and that's why it seems okay to you. Now compare it with what God says, and then you'll know whether it's right or not. But they don't do that. They just go on their own emotion. Or like I've told you before, you know, with my boys especially. Why did you do that? After about 15 minutes of, I don't know. Finally it comes down to, well, because I wanted to. Because I felt like it. That really was why they did it. I felt like doing it. Oh, I really wanted to do that. So I did it. Of course. That's how human nature thinks when you aren't controlled by God's law when I say controlled, when you are guided by God's law, God doesn't control us. But when you aren't following God's principles, and when you're not thinking about them, which David did all the time, how I love your law, and he thinks about it all the time, as opposed to other people who are going, goes along, well, I think it looks good to me. That looks good. Feels good. Seems good. And then God says, but that's the way of death. But you can't see it unless you have the truth of God. And God called us out of the world, gave us these laws and principles, and I want to emphasize the word principles here, that we live by. They aren't just do's and don'ts that we have to follow, you know, in the letter. They are principles that we live by, and this is where people will, in the past, they'd call the ministry, well, what should I do about this, and what should I do about that? I mean, I've had people call me, well, what color car should I buy, you know? Or like when, this was years and years ago, and one lady called the pastor and said, my potato just blew up in the oven, what should I do? And he said, well, clean it up. You know, because, you know, that's not God's way. He wants us to take the principles that he's laid out here and then apply them to the situations that we face. They're principles. And the principle applies to everything. You know, in the man's law, you can find loopholes and ways to get around. Think, well, it doesn't say that. You'll never catch God in that situation. His thing is a principle, and a principle applies to whatever we do. That's a big difference. Okay, so that's one of the traps we can fall into there. All right, the fourth commandment, of course, we're all very well aware of. Remember the Sabbath day, verse 8, to keep it holy. 6 days you labor and do all your work, but the seventh day is the Sabbath of the Lord your God. In it you shall do no work. You, nor your son, nor your daughter, nor your manservant, nor your maidservant, nor your cattle, nor your stranger who is within your gates. In other words, whatever is under your control, this is not a time for working. You shouldn't be sitting there, quote, keeping the Sabbath with your family and then making sure your servant's out there cleaning the barn or something. You know, that's not the right principle. For 6 days, and this is where people just miss the boat completely. This shows you when the Sabbath was made. For in 6 days the Lord made heaven and earth, the sea and all that is in them, and rested the seventh day. Therefore, the Lord blessed the Sabbath day and hallowed it. Genesis, the second chapter, and first couple of verses. Now, these are the words from God, speaking from the top of the mountain and telling people, this is my day, and this is when I made it. Now, what benefit does the Sabbath have for us? Well, it gives us a physical rest. You think about it, physical rest, which we need. We need to have a spiritual rejuvenation. We need to have an opportunity to be with our family, reunite with our family. In today's society, families going all over the place, eating at different times, not together, just crazy, crazy life that we live in today in this society. So this regroups the family starting Friday evening. Know that you're going to have dinner together and spend the evening together and go to church the next day. Rest, get a little extra sleep. We go to church and we have an opportunity to fellowship with others who believe the same way, as opposed to the environment that we've been fighting all week long out there in the world, dealing with the society, which is not simple. And then we also have an opportunity to learn from instruction, and we're able to learn new things from the sermons, hopefully, that's clear, and we're able to benefit from that. Coming to church is as important as far as the fellowship is concerned, as at least my opinion. Fellowship is as important as the service itself, just to reunite and be together and to share experiences of what's transpired during the week. A very helpful thing. So those are some of the benefits we gain by keeping the Sabbath that other people don't enjoy because they don't do it. And God made it for us, as Christ said there in Mark 2nd chapter, the Sabbath was made for man, not man for the Sabbath. He makes it very clear. No questions asked. Okay, I got to move here. Fifth commandment, principle, honor your father and your mother, that your days may be long upon the land which the Lord your God give you. Now, that's a pretty easy thing to see if you think about it. Recently, it's been kind of popular for children to blame their parents for all their problems. Oh, those parents, they were stupid. They were evil. They didn't treat me right. That's why I have all these troubles. I haven't heard that kind of talking now for last few years, but that was a real popular concept. They didn't want to take the responsibility. What if your parents weren't teaching you very well? Are you smart enough to recognize that? And you can even learn from that. Because not only do we learn from what to do, but we can learn a lot from what not to do. And we could see what my parents did. They didn't understand. And, of course, there's no instruction book or a manual that they hand out before you have a family. Of course, the Bible has the principles in there. But you still have to learn through experience. And if you have a number of children, by the time you get to the second or third or fourth, you're doing a better job because you've learned. It just takes experience. And it's not the best or it's not the easy thing in the world. But most parents, and there are exceptions to this, but most all parents have the desire to help their children avoid making the mistakes that they made. And if the children don't honor their parents and they don't listen to that and they don't learn from their parents' mistakes that they're trying to share with them, then they will go through the same thing and have to suffer themselves. So we all want to, you know, help young people avoid problems. And as you're older, you've already gone through and you've already made some dumb mistakes and you've learned the hard way and you want to share that with your family and certainly with your children. So it's important for the children to respect older people and to listen to what they have to say because you can learn a great deal from them and it helps you avoid pain and suffering in your life if you pay attention. If you're dumb enough to say, well, I know everything, and these people are dumb, they're old and they're decrepit, and they don't know what they're talking about, and I'm not going to listen, fine, then you just have a nice day. And you'll come back and be like my grandfather used to say when he was in his late 80s, you'll find out. And we're finding out, I'll tell you. So you need to listen and be wise and listen to the advice of people who have already gone through it. Or if you see someone who's older and who has made all kinds of dumb mistakes, and you see now the results of his life, and this person is a down-and-outer, how'd they get that way? Well, they didn't work hard, they didn't study, they didn't prepare. So you go, I'm not going to make that mistake. You still learn, can't you? So that's why you need to respect, honor your parents. That's a very important thing. It's going to save you. And that's the purpose that God put here in this commandment. Okay, murder, same principle. Life is a lot better if you don't go out and lose control of your emotions and you lose control of your temper. If you murder somebody, you have all the relatives of that person after you. You have the police after you. You have to live with that experience. Your life is going to go down the drain. Yeah, this is my resume. You know, I want a good job here. I've got all this talent and ability, and that may be the case. But on your resume, I spent so many years in prison because I'm a murderer. Oh, yeah, we want to sign you right up. You know, I mean, so the key here is you want to have self-control. And you don't want to let anger or emotion overwhelm you. If you do, you lose the benefit of the freedom of life that comes with from not being a murderer. That's a pretty big thing. And, of course, it hurts a lot of people when you take someone's life, including you. As I put here in my notes, it protects you from a world of hurt. And it would ruin your entire life. Okay, next one. Adultery. This is what I was going over with our teenagers, and I wanted to... let's go back to Proverbs, the second chapter here real quick. This book, of course, was written... Proverbs was written to the young people. And this is the principle. Anybody who allows themselves, again, it's a control of emotions. It's a control of, or it's a matter of self-control. And it hurts you. And you're the one who brings problems on yourself when you disobey or break this principle. Proverbs, the second chapter, verse 10, to the young people, it says, when wisdom enters into your heart and knowledge is pleasant to your soul, but you see, a lot of people aren't wise enough to think that knowledge and learning is a good thing. It's not pleasant to them. They reject. Don't tell me what to do. I know what I'm going to do. I make my own decisions around here. They're very proud. But when it says wisdom enters your heart, and this is what I was trying to share with our young people, that you need to seek after wisdom because it helps you avoid lots of pain in life. When wisdom enters into your heart and knowledge is pleasant to your soul, oh, am I glad to know that. I would have done so-and-so, but now I see that was a dumb thing to do. Discernment shall preserve you. Preserve you, understanding shall keep you. So having discernment is going to preserve you. You can discern, hey, this is a bad situation. I'm not even going to get close to that. I can see where that's going to lead. Just like these kids over in Ohio with all this big rape charge that's going on right now. With these teenagers and drinking and all this stupidness. Any kid that has any kind of wisdom at all and any kind of discernment would have recognized, I'm getting out of here. This is a bad deal. I'm not having anything to do with this. That's why it says it's going to preserve you and understanding will keep you. Verse 12, to deliver you from the way of the evil man, from the man that speaks froward things, the one that comes out, hey, let's do this, hey, let's do that. That's what it means here in Old King James, froward, or in other words, disobedient things, who leave the paths of uprightness to walk in the ways of darkness. They think they're doing great things, but of course, they're in the darkness. Who rejoice, in verse 14, to do evil and delight in frowardness of the wicked. Just like the story I heard there in New Jersey, where this garbage company had a great, you know, they were being paid go from New Jersey to the Pennsylvania landfill, and you had to click a ticket when you left the garbage collection area with this big semi load of garbage. And when you got over to the landfill, then the guy would click your ticket again, showing that you traveled and you unloaded and then you came back. Well, they got paid big money to do that. Well, if you're a crook, what you do is you pay the guy off at the landfill to click your ticket, but you never go there. You go over to the truck loading area, and if you've seen these loading areas where trucks can back in on either side, you back your semi in over here filled with garbage, and they begin pulling the garbage out, and they load it back into little garbage trucks, which goes back to the regular garbage dump, and it just goes around in a circle while you get paid for going. Now, the guys that were seeing this were laughing about it. Oh, man, look at that guy. He's making all kinds of big money, and he's not doing anything. And at the end of the week, you go back over, fill up your semi, you drive it 5 miles. And just one story I could share with you of many, most corrupt place I have ever been. Anyway, it's just unbelievable. And that's why he said, who rejoice to do evil and delight in the frowardness of the wicked. Oh, man, look at that. Verse 15, those whose ways are crooked, and they are froward in their paths to deliver the, and he's talking to the young people, to deliver you from the strange woman, even from the stranger, which flatters with her words. Very enticing atmosphere, tries to draw you in. Which forsakes the guide of her youth and forgets the covenant of her God, for her house inclines unto death and her paths unto the dead. Not too promising. None that go unto her return again, neither take they hold of the paths of life. That you may walk in the way of good men and keep the paths of the righteous, for the upright shall dwell in the land, and the perfect shall remain in it. But the wicked shall be cut off from the earth, and transgressors shall be rooted out of it. Don't fall for it, in other words. Again, you need to control yourself. Because if you don't, that's where you're headed. Pretty clear. Stealing, same situation. You like to be known as a thief? Boy, I tell you, don't mess with that guy. He'll steal you blind. You know, by not stealing, it certainly helps your reputation. It does not, you know, those things don't belong to you. You don't deserve them. And it prevents you from being punished and from jail. And from ruining your reputation and ruining your name. That's a benefit. Big benefit. Don't steal. That's a bad thing. You suffer if you do it. You may look and go, oh, wow, I could. If nobody's looking, I could grab that. Then I'd have it. Yeah, but eventually you're going to get caught. And when you do, these are the penalties. Lying is the same thing. Don't lie. If you ask him for about the reputation of that guy, what have you heard? You can't trust that guy as far as you can throw him. Don't do business with him. You know, the days I have found people in business who I could do business with on a handshake. But look at what we have to do, because people don't tell the truth, or they're trying to cheat you. You have all these big complicated contracts and all these loopholes that are trying to be closed, and on it goes. And the lawyers are making all kinds of money because people aren't truthful. And then they always want to change the rules, or they want to cheat somebody. You're not, you know, we need to be good to our word. and not to be a liar. That hurts us. And then finally, coveting, which boils down to people who covet are always frustrated. You know why? Pretty easy to see. You want to go around in total frustration all the time? Because they always want more than what they have. If I just had this, or if I just had that, then I'd be happy. And sometimes they get just that. And they, you know what? They're still not happy. And they wake up realizing, well, that didn't solve my problem. Well, maybe if I had this thing. Or when people get real discouraged and they feel down, sometimes people's solution is, I'm going to go out and buy stuff. So they go out and buy things. Because, oh, that'll make me feel better. Well, no, it doesn't. Go back to Philippians, the fourth chapter here. And this pretty well summarizes it, and then we're done. Philippians 4. But these are benefits that God's law gives us. And it's a wonderful thing if you follow those principles. It's not just a do all these checklist things. It's a matter you live by these principles. And that's why David thought about them all day long. Because he could see, oh, yeah. That principle applies here. Well, that solves that problem. And he could see the benefit of it. And he said, I love your law, because he could see what it was doing for him. Okay, Philippians 4, and here in verse 11, he said, not that I speak in, this is Paul now, not that I speak in respect of want, for I have learned in whatsoever state I am, therewith to be content. And in the next verse he says, I know how to be abased and I know how to abound. He'd been in high positions and he'd also been in lowly positions. But if you follow those principles of not coveting and always wanting something that you don't have, but if you learn to be content with where you are, God provides what we need. Never promises that we're going to be multimillionaires. But he gives us what we need. He takes care of us. And I don't think anyone can deny that in our experience here with God. Go back to verses 6 and 7. Be careful for nothing, he said in the same chapter, verse 6. Be careful for nothing, but in everything by prayer and supplication, with thanksgiving, let your request be made known to God. So we have to be in a thankful attitude. He says, and the peace of God, which passes all understanding, shall keep your hearts and minds through Christ Jesus. And then he goes on and talks about whatsoever things are true and honest, just, pure, lovely, good. He said, think on those or these things. That's what we should be focusing on, not coveting and wishing we had this and wishing we had that, which isn't going to end up making you happy anyway, because that's not where happiness is, and that's not where peace of mind is. So hopefully this will help us reflect on God's laws and realize that these principles are necessary for us to be happy and have a fulfilled life, and that they are principles and not just do's and don'ts.